Do you have lifelong friends? Do you prioritize them the way you probably do your romantic relationships? In our culture, having an intimate partner or spouse is considered one of the primary goals of life, while friendships are often seen as optional. But for some, friendships are as important or more important than romance, even if those deep platonic connections are not socially valorized. Raina Cohen describes these relationships in the new book, The Other Significant Others, Reimagining Life with Friendship at the Center. Raina is an award-winning producer and editor for NPR's documentary podcast, Embedded, and her work has aired on podcasts and radio shows, including Hidden Brain, Invisibilia, and All Things Considered. And her writing has appeared in The Atlantic, The Washington Post, The New Republic, and elsewhere. Here she is to share five of her big ideas.
I'm Raina Cohen. I'm a producer and editor at NPR. I also write about social connection for outlets like The Atlantic. I'm the author of the book, The Other Significant Others, Reimagining Life with Friendship at the Center. I'm going to share five key insights from my book. Insight number one, we underestimate friendship today. Think about the language we often use when talking about friendship. We call people who are in a platonic relationship just friends. But if people are in a romantic relationship, we say they're more than friends. This kind of language reflects and reinforces the common view that friendship is a peripheral relationship. Friends have to fit into your life. You're not expected to fit your career or romantic relationship around your friendships. This idea that friendship is a lesser relationship hasn't always been true. In ancient Rome, a person might describe a friend with terms we now use for a spouse, like half of my soul or the greater part of my soul. Friendship used to be publicly celebrated. Centuries ago, male friends across the world were ritually turned into brothers. The way this often worked was the men would gather in a church, place their hands on the Gospels, and a priest would say prayers over them. After the ceremony, they were expected to support each other for the rest of their lives. Some of these sworn brothers were buried together. Then fast forward to the 17th through 19th centuries in the U.S. and parts of Europe, and you'll find something called romantic friendship. Same-sex friends wrote effusive letters. They exchanged locks of hair. They sat for portraits where their arms were wrapped around each other. History shows that if we don't set unnecessary limits, friendship can be deep and central to our lives. Insight number two. Marriage alone can't solve loneliness. I just mentioned how we talk about friendship. Now think about the kinds of messages we hear about marriage. In the landmark Supreme Court case that overturned bans on same-sex marriage, Justice Kennedy wrote, "Marriage responds to the universal fear that a lonely person might call out, only to find no one there." The highest court in the land was basically saying, marriage is the answer to loneliness. Comments like this equate not being married to being alone, or more morbidly, dying alone. For one thing, it's possible to feel lonely within a marriage. But beyond that, it's a lot to ask this one relationship to act as our full defense against loneliness. During the pandemic, many partnered people learned that one person isn't enough to meet all of their needs. And research shows that married people are more satisfied when they have forms of close social support besides their spouse. Even for those who do get married, this one relationship is probably not going to be around for their entire adult lives. That's because few Americans today get married when they graduate high school and stay married to that same person until they die. If they get married at all, which fewer and fewer people have been doing, they might be single for years or decades before marrying. The relationship could end through separation or one spouse outliving the other. Our lives have chapters, and to feel fully connected throughout each of them, many of us need more than one deep relationship. Insight number three. Commitment, not sex, is what defines partnership. As I interviewed people with these deep friendships, a basic question came up for me. How do we define partnership? Take two women I spoke to, Barb and Inez. Both are in their 80s. They met back in 1969, and they were working at the same place. Inez had gotten a job after splitting from her husband. Now she needed to support her children. Barb went on to become very close to Inez and her two sons. When Barb and Inez were about to retire 25 years ago, they bought a house together in the St. Louis suburbs. They didn't plan to live together, but they could only afford to live where they wanted to if they pooled resources. Now they share a bank account, a primary care doctor, and an email address. They've been each other's main source of support during hospital stays and tragedies. Their friendship of 50 years doesn't look all that different from the relationship between many romantic couples, especially couples whose heady passion morphed into a quieter companionate love over time. These friends show that sex and sparks aren't necessary to live life as partners. After all, couples at the altar don't vow to experience romantic passion for the rest of their lives. They vow to be there for better, for worse, for richer, for poor, in sickness and in health. In other words, when it comes to partnership, what matters is commitment. Insight number 4. Friends can be our significant others. If we recognize that fact, we'd improve people's lives. I have talked to so many people like these women who have deep, committed friendships, but our culture and laws don't leave room for the possibility that friendship can anchor a person's life. I heard about emotional harms that platonic partners suffered. They felt their friendship was invisible. Pairs of straight male friends told me they were the subject of gossip and jokes. People they knew speculated about whether the friendship was in fact a romantic relationship, and if the guys were in denial about their sexuality. I heard from people who were criticized by others for prioritizing a friendship. They were made to feel immature, as if they were a train that stalled before reaching the station of full adulthood. Friends also suffered tangible harms. So those friends of 50 years who lived together, well, one time Inez ended up in the emergency room. Barb was asked by a nurse if she was a relative, and when she said no, she had trouble getting into the hospital. Another woman I talked to, Joy, took care of her friend Hannah during Hannah's 6-year battle with ovarian cancer. But Joy wasn't entitled to bereavement leave after Hannah died, though she would have been able to take bereavement leave after the death of an uncle she'd never met. If we recognized that friendship has the potential to be just as meaningful as a romantic or familial relationship, friends like these would have dignity and support at the times that matter most. Insight number 5. There's more than one way to live a fulfilling life. A lot of people feel under a specific kind of pressure, and I think that pressure is best captured in a question that's posed in a novel called A Little Life. The question is, but how was one to be an adult? Was couplehood truly the only appropriate option? The answer is, we're told that the only legitimate option is being coupled up, and romantic partnership can be meaningful. I say this as someone who's married. But the people I interviewed, who happily orient their lives around a friend, show that being one half of a romantic couple is just one potential form of fulfillment. Their stories can also help us see that this one model of romantic coupling probably isn't enough for all the surprises that life throws at us. Take Inez again, the woman who lives with her best friend of a half century. She was married and raising two kids in the suburbs by her early 20s, basically doing all the things she was supposed to. But she decided that she needed to leave her husband to make a better life for her children. There went her nuclear family. I interviewed someone who realized they were asexual, so a conventional romantic relationship wasn't going to work for them. They went on to develop a partnership with a friend. A woman I talked to who wanted to have kids but hadn't found a romantic partner by her mid-30s decided to have a child on her own. Then her friend fell in love with the baby and became so involved that she eventually got legal recognition as the boy's second parent. The surprises that these people faced, some of them difficult, some of them delightful, removed that one acceptable path of romantic coupling for them. These surprises also opened these people's minds to finding another path that worked for them. These friends show us that we can bring more imagination to our relationships.
Thank you, Raina. That was Raina Cohen with 5 big ideas from The Other Significant Others, Reimagining Life with Friendship at the Center. You might also like our book bite for Platonic, How the Science of Attachment Can Help You Make and Keep Friends by Marissa Franco. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.